You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Hi, we are back and we have leader of the Labour Party, Andrew Little, live in studio with us. Hey, Andrew, how's it going?
I'm very good. Yeah, how are you?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
Fantastic.
So, Nikki Haga and John Stevenson's joint collaboration, Hit and Run, was released this Tuesday. And the book details an NZSAS raid gone wrong in Afghanistan in 2010, as well as the consequent cover-up. Do you support an investigation into these allegations?
Yes, because part of the story is that after the raid happened, the New Zealand Defence Force, their account of it said that there were no civilian casualties. And even though there was another report afterwards after a complaint that said there were no civilian casualties, it's pretty clear that there were. And I think we need to know what happened, who was in command, and how decisions were made, and why it is that New Zealand troops appear to have been involved in an event that led to such a number of civilian casualties, both fatalities and injuries.
Mm-hmm. What about the notion of a cover-up? Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I mean, it does look like you look at those early releases and some of the messages coming out of the Defence Force. First it was, there are no civilian casualties. Then it was, well, if there are civilian casualties, they're not the responsibility of New Zealand troops. So there was a bit of a shifting story. I mean, I'm reluctant to go as far as saying there's been a cover-up, because who knows who provided what information to whom at what time, sort of thing. I think the book makes it clear, and it raises serious allegations and indicates a pretty solid evidential basis for it, which is why I think that for the sake of the reputation of the SAS, of the New Zealand Defence Forces generally, and for New Zealand, because we send deployments overseas, that we do need to know what the truth is, and the government should order an inquiry.
Mm-hmm. And former Defence Minister Wayne Mapp has conceded that some civilians died in the attacks, which is a shift from his position in 2011, where he insisted no civilians died. What do you make of this shift in the position?
Yeah, I mean, he was actually quoted in the book saying that he thought the whole exercise was a disaster and was a fiasco. So he obviously knew enough a few years ago when he first made those comments. Now he's repeated them. I think that makes the case for an independent inquiry even more compelling. Mm-hmm. Clearly some people know something about that exercise, that raid, that has gone horribly wrong and led to civilian casualties. Because, of course, it's not just the fact there were casualties, it was the failure to follow up and provide care and assistance to the injured people, which is, even in wartime, is a responsibility of soldiers.
Right. And Mapp also said that the actions carried out during the raid could not be considered war crimes. Do you agree with this?
Well, I don't think it's for him to say, and I don't think it's for anybody to say until we actually establish what the actual facts are. You know, these events were done at a time of high tension, of a sort of a combat environment, if you like, and weeks after the soldiers involved, the New Zealand soldiers involved, had lost a comrade to a roadside bomb. So, emotions no doubt were running high, and no one can kind of put themselves easily in the position they might have been in. What we do know is that there were civilian casualties, there are serious allegations about alleged failings on the part of our troops, and I think for all our sake and the sake of the reputation of New Zealand and its defence forces, we need to get to the bottom of it, and only an independent inquiry can do that.
Mm-hmm. So we can't really make any substantial sort of calls on it just yet.
I'd be reluctant to go too far. I mean, as I say, I think Nikki Haga and John Stevenson have laid out with some detail a set of facts. No one has come out so far, 48 hours after the publication of the book, to say, no, that's all factually wrong. They've laid out some facts. There are some grey areas, so we know that most of the fatalities were the result of a helicopter gunship that was American, and so piloted by, crewed by Americans. One of the questions is, were they being directed by our troops, our commander on the ground, or were they following American instructions? So there's that sort of thing. And then there's when the insurgent that they did ultimately catch up with and transfer to the Afghanis, they were with, when they arrested him, they were with some Afghani police. Who made the arrest, and therefore does that bring it within kind of wartime conditions, or is it a arrest by a local force? So there are some legal grey areas that is even more reason for why we need an inquiry to know what the truth is and know whether there have been breaches of international law.
Mm-hmm. And moving on, it's also been revealed that Labour's Māori MPs will only be running in their electorates and not on the party's list. What prompted this move?
They came to me as a group some weeks ago and told me that that's what they would like to do. The way the Labour Party operates is our expectation is that every candidate will be on the list, but you can apply for an exemption. We have a reasonably high threshold for it. They put to me the argument that because of the way things are going in the Māori seats, they will have a stronger platform for campaigning on and winning their seats back if they don't look like they have a kind of a parachute of a list placing. So it was their request. It was considered very carefully by the group of us who look at these exemptions, and in the end we agreed to it. We know that they will have a strong campaign. They've got a strong campaign team as part of the Labour's overall campaign team, and they're up for it and they want to get into it.
But isn't this kind of condemning the voters in a sense, because it sounds like you're saying if you don't give us your candidate vote, you'll be losing these Māori MPs and Labour won't have them in Parliament?
That's actually the message they want to give. Because they're saying they, you know, most of them have got, all of them have got a good track record in this last term. Some have been around longer than others. They're all good, strong advocates on Māori policy, on Māori development, on improving the situations where Māori are overrepresented and shouldn't be. And they're going to stand on their own digs and say, yeah, vote for us. If you don't vote for us, we're not back. And that is the challenge that they're laying down.
But that sounds like you're blackmailing voters.
No, not blackmailing at all. I think there is the contest is between Labour Māori MPs and the Māori Party. And we are saying, we have said for some time, that after 9 years of the Māori Party being a coalition partner to the National Party, what have Māori got to show for it? Because a lot of things haven't got better. In fact, things have got worse. Māori home ownership has gone down. Māori unemployment has got worse. Māori health statistics, if you like, you know, what is happening to Māori health has got worse under this government. And so the claim by the Māori Party that they are this independent voice for Māori and will stand up and achieve things clearly is not true. We've got to have that debate. Māori and our Māori MPs are saying we've got to have that debate. Māori have to have that debate, and this is the way of bringing that on.
So is this kind of just like a strategic move specifically set out to defeat the Māori Party and the mana?
It's to lay down the challenge to the Māori Party and mana and say let's fight this on equal terms. We don't have a fallback position of a list placing. All we've got is the fact that we're standing here as a candidate in the seat, and Māori voters will have to make that choice, and that'll compel both sides to put the best case forward.
Mm-hmm. And you had the option of elevating your Māori MPs and putting them higher up on the list, but refused to do so. You don't think there's any chance this move will backfire on you?
I don't know where you get that proposition from. We haven't done our list yet. It's not due to be done till the end of April. What we do is, of our 7 Māori MPs, 5 are in the shadow cabinet and 2 are on the front bench. So our Māori MPs are well represented at all levels. In the end, what this comes down to is a choice, I guess, about for Māori representation at the highest levels of government. Is it going to be on the kind of grace and favour basis that the Māori Party has with the National Party at the moment? Or is it permanent multiple seats at the cabinet table and every cabinet committee, which is what a good, strong representation of Māori within the Labour Party gives?
Mm-hmm. What about in regards to Māori voters specifically? Like, does this not risk severing the strong link Labour's built with them over the years?
No, not at all. It actually, what it will do is strengthen it. Got to remember, in 2014, we increased the number of Māori seats that we held. We increased the level of support that we won from Māori, and we're determined to continue to build on that and continue to be a good, strong voice for Māori. And Māori, not just in New Zealand, but overseas as well. You look at what Calvin Davis has done for Māori who are being treated pretty shabbily in Australia. He's been there. So, no, this is about strengthening our connection with the Māori electorate, and that's what we're going to do.
Right. There was a major environmental report released this week, the OECD report, which has urged the government to act immediately in order to protect the country's water, native species and climate, and to stop stop favouring short-term private interests over environmental health. Do you think our current government's economic strategy has any part to play in these rising environmental concerns?
Oh, there's no question about it. They have actively promoted the greater intensification of farming. It's seen more nutrients being put on the land, which have been leaching into waterways. They've been very slow at doing the things that prevent that leaching into waterways, such as riparian planting. And they've taken a very lackadaisical view on it. So I think the OECD is, that's their observation. I think they're right. And if we want to turn that around, clean up our waterways, then there's a number of things we have to do. Labour is committed to doing it, and that is better managing the application of nutrients on land, doing the planting, making sure that farmers are investing in that, and over time, de-intensifying particularly dairy farming.
Mm. And you did touch on this a little bit before. The report has highlighted the mismanagement of New Zealand's water as a key concern. What are your thoughts on the matter, especially in the wake of Nick Smith's recent comments regarding water quality definitions and measurements?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's tried to redefine what swimmable is by saying that, by just defining that it allows for a higher level of E. coli, one of the worst bacteria you can have in water, which is crazy. We, you know, if we're going to clean up our waterways, we have to have a proper standard that regional councils and landowners bordering those waterways have to meet, and that's what Labor is determined to do. The issue has come, it's sort of come into sharper focus with the water bottling issue and the calls by various communities for water bottling companies to have to pay something towards the water that they're extracting. And because associated with that is the availability of clean water from other sources. And I think a lot more New Zealanders now are seeing water is precious and we do want to preserve it and clean it up and keep it clean. And they want more action from government on that.
So do you think the government should review its planned $400 million investment in irrigation schemes?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the priority's got to be working on clean water, and in terms of activities that require intensive water use, if it is more intensive farming, then in the long term, that's simply not sustainable. So I think there is scope to review that.
Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned before, farming intensification has also been listed as a major risk to our green reputation. Is this report a call to reevaluate our farming practices in New Zealand?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the first to do so. I mean, there's plenty of reports around calling out the more risky behaviours, if you like, of the farming sector. And in fairness, a lot more farmers now are showing greater awareness, are starting to do the things, and Fonterra is trying to work with farmers to get more planting and work with, you know, much more sophisticated application of nutrients onto pasture land. So that stuff is starting. The government needed to have done a lot more earlier and could still do a lot more now to encourage that and hasten that and improve farm practices.
So how will we transition to a greener, low-carbon economy under a Labor government?
Well, part of our economic challenge is to shift our economic profile away from this reliance on commodified agricultural products to more sophisticated, elaborately transformed manufacturers. It's an area where the Labour and the Greens line up very nicely. You know, the green economy has huge opportunities for modern, technologically savvy based manufacturing and, you know, niche manufacturing. So we want to do more to move down that path, which is much more ecologically friendly.
Okay, cool. So I think that's all we have time for today. But thank you very much for coming into the studio.
Great to be in.
Yeah, great to meet you. And we'll speak to you again same time next week.
Look forward to it.
Yeah.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.